Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, two questions. First of all, should humans love their technology? That's the first question. Second question, should technology love humans?
Okay. I'm going to say yes and yes, because I think that you can't stop love in any form, right?
Really?
Yeah. I think that we'll maybe make this case today. I don't know. Or we'll just muddle the whole concept of love. But I do think that we can't help but to love our technology and be attached to it. And eventually that will become this idea that robots will be programmed to love us because we just love love.
Well, that sounds sweet. But I think you can stop love. I think love is a very stoppable force.
I think it's a virus.
Yeah.
It persists.
Viruses are stoppable, some of them. So we have the ability to stop some forms of love in their tracks. Because the first thing we need to discuss is, of course, the nature of love. What is love?
Okay.
Because love is just a word. Like, love is a big tent that encompasses a lot of things. Because, you know, obviously there's the love one feels for one's wife. There's the love one feels for one's child. There's the love one feels for, a really good sandwich. And these are vastly different emotional states.
Oh, yeah. I think that Aristotle had a sandwich love category.
Yeah. You can kill a love for a sandwich if you just say, oh, well, that sandwich isn't very good for you, or those ingredients are really foul, or that restaurant got a really crippling health rating. And then you might be, oh, well, maybe I don't love this sandwich as much.
Anymore. Or you could overindulge in the sandwich.
Yeah. Whereas it's harder to kill the love, say, for a spouse or a child or something, just because someone says, well, that kid's hair is a little weird. You're not going to be like, oh, well, okay, love removed. Generally speaking.
Sometimes that
depends on
that
how
happens.
Bad the hair is.
Yeah. Did you know that "what is love" was the most searched phrase on Google in 2012?
Really?
Yeah. People want to know.
Were they looking for that song? Isn't that the "what is love"? Baby, don't hurt me. That song?
What? Keep singing it.
Baby, don't hurt me. That's all I know.
Yeah. No, I don't think it was that song.
Okay.
But I'm glad that we got to get you to say
that. Might have been like 25% of the searches were just looking for those lyrics.
It's possible. It's possible. But, well, this idea that people are searching for the meaning of love had one Guardian article called What is Love? Talk to several different experts about their take on love, which was sort of interesting. Because, again, here's this big, huge concept that it has so many different meanings and so many different categories.
And it's to the point where the word itself tends to lose meaning. You know? Like when someone says, oh, I love something, it almost is a pointless thing to say. Because it's such an overused word that we've just stripped it of all its power.
That is true. I was just thinking that with my daughter, I don't like her to say the word hate.
Yeah.
I oftentimes will say, do you truly hate that? You know, is it just that you dislike it? Because that's a word that's very strong. But I never say, do you really love that? Are you sure you love that? Because there's so much positivity associated with it. Theoretical physicist and science writer Jim Al Khalil had said that while lust is a temporary passionate sexual desire involving the increased release of chemicals like testosterone and estrogen, he says that in true love or attachment and bonding, the brain can release a whole set of chemicals, pheromones, dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, oxytocin, and vasopressin. So he says from an evolutionary perspective, love can be viewed as a survival tool, a mechanism that we evolved to promote long-term relationships, mutual defense, and parental support of children, and to promote feelings of safety and security.
Yeah, so it's basically a chemical bond to things that enable us to better perform our genetic mission as organisms. There are several different versions of love that are laid out in this particular article. For instance, there's philia, the deep non-sexual intimacy between close friends or family members or soldiers in the trench. You know, it's this bond of love that's not sexual, not romantic, but it's your bros kind of, you know. Kind of bro love.
Bra love,
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Then there's ludus, playful affection found in fooling around or flirting. Now, this one is, I guess, a little harder to, like, nail down. I mean, I guess I can think of some past examples of that, you know, where you're kind of, like, flirty with somebody, but you're not really going after them, per se, you know?
There doesn't seem to be much to that one, right? Because that's such an ephemeral state.
Yeah, it's kind
flirting.
Of like that one's just, like, I mean, that one can be killed by, like, sobering up a bit, I think. That's not... It's barely love. It seems a little cheap to even classify it as a form of love.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Then there's pragma, the mature love that develops over a long period of time between long-term couples. And this is really, you know, when people talk about all that deep love that grows out of a relationship. Because a relationship may begin with lust or even this ludus thing we're talking about. Or it may begin with philia. But over time, it develops into this strong bond, this bond where it's built over time and in a way that just can't be, pulled off a shelf. And it involves just a lot of goodwill towards another person. It's like wanting the best for someone, regardless of the cost.
So you might not have a huge surge in dopamine or vasopressin or even oxytocin, but it's there. It's still, from a chemical level, it's still sort of running behind the scenes.
Then there's agape, the more generalized love that I remember hearing a lot about in church. It's kind of like this sort of universal love. Love everybody. Love your neighbor, right? Even if it doesn't seem practical. It's just kind of an idealized, good-natured, be cool with everyone, which, is a good way to look at the world if you can do it.
Yeah, it's kind of the 70s love hug.
Then there is self-love, or philatelia, which... Is maybe not as selfish as it sounds.
And to be clear, we're not talking about self-love in the sexual context either.
No. This just means, you can break it down to the fact that if you're going to care about others, you need to be able to care about yourself. And then there's, of course, eros, sexual passion and desire. And this is, again, when people talk about love at first sight in terms of a male-female romantic relationship, this is often what they're actually talking about, I believe. You know, they're talking about eros. They're talking about lust and physical attraction, sexual attraction, that may, again, eventually morph into some other form of love or just fall off entirely.
Yeah, that's what I feel. It should be asterisked. Like, it's not really a form of love unless it becomes philia or pragma.
Yeah.
Or some other type of love.
Yeah, it's more like a pre-love secretion or something. I don't know. Depends how you want to.
Secretion?
Think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because again, we're talking a lot about hormones flowing, about you know, your hormonal response to a potential mate, your hormonal response to you know, an infant, a child, you know, some sort of offspring. There's a lot of secreting going along.
There is a lot of secreting, and you can't really secrete all of those for just one person, right? All those
right.
different types of love. I mean, perhaps there's that one rare person in your life that can take on all those roles of love, but most likely your family, your friends, your community take on all these different aspects of it.
Yeah. In this article, they also talked to a philosopher.
Yes.
They talked about love as a passionate commitment, which really kind of flows in with the pragma we were talking about.
Yep. It says that we have to, this is from Julian Baggini, the philosopher, who said that we need to nurture and develop it, even though it usually arrives in our lives unbidden.
Yeah.
So you take this idea of what love could be, and then you begin to think about how we love objects or things. And I started to think about this idea of apophenia. Now, apophenia is this sort of unmotivated seeing of a connection and a specific feeling of abnormal meaningfulness that we ascribe to an object. And this was defined by German neurologist and psychologist Klaus Conrad. So that means when you look at an inanimate object and you see what looks like a pair of eyes and a nose and a mouth, you're unconsciously trying to make sense of the data in front of you. And you're ascribing it with something that is not what it actually is, right? But it's our human context that we're bringing with us all the time, so we can't help to sort of project those humanness feelings onto something.
Yeah, and as you've brought up before, we have this surprising ability to see faces. Like, you don't have to put a smiley face even on something to give it this sense of person and give it, I mean, we glimpse faces in the clouds, we glimpse faces
yeah.
on the moon, and it's all just kind of this, you know, this atavistic resonance where our pattern-seeking brains are looking for things that affect us, and what would affect us more than peering into the night and seeing the face of man or beast, you know, lurching there in the dark. That would be some vital information you need to know, because friend or foe is right upon you.
Yeah, actually, Sonja Windhager, she's an anthropologist at the University of Vienna, said in an interview with Life Science that this tendency would have likely protected our ancestors. And she said taking a bear for a stone might be lethal, but the opposite does no harm.
Yeah, you get down to that whole thing of that whole situation of type 1 and type 2 errors. You know, one error means that, oh, you got me, you're not actually a bear trying to eat me. And the other error is, oh, you're actually a bear and you just devoured me. So which one, obviously, does evolution end up selecting?
Yeah, what's the error that you're going to have? And so then you have this apophenia, this, you know, pattern recognition, seeing patterns everywhere, and you meld that together with anthropomorphism, and that's giving human characteristics to animals and inanimate objects. And you begin to see that as humans, we are going to maybe shovel off some of our emotions onto these objects. And I wanted to bring up this study that Windhager and her colleagues conducted, this tendency for us to actually personify cars. Now, she conducted this study in Austria.
Which I've never understood. You know, it happens all the time, especially in TV shows where someone's got a car and it's got this lady's name.
Knight Rider.
Well, but that was what Kit, I think, was the
yes.
That car actually talked and had personality. And they loved each other.
But it's that's the fantasy of the relationship that some people want to have with their cars.
I guess. It comes off kind of creepy, though, sometimes, because
it's like a dude talking
about his car, and his fancy car has, like, a lady's name, and it's like there's an implied relationship there that's kind of weird.
All right, so, I mean, yeah, people do have relationships with their cars. My daughter loves our car, and she kisses it. It's very odd.
Does it have a name, though?
Yeah.
What?
Lightning McQueen.
Lightning McQueen.
From the movie Cars, which probably has something to do with it, right? Actually, that whole movie is that animation is a great example of anthropomorphizing something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
All right, so Windhager's study in Austria, she reported in 2008 that people attribute human traits to vehicles based on factors such as the shape of the headlights and the size of the windshield.
Yeah, because those are eyes, obviously.
Right. Eyes, you've got the mouth there with the grill.
Mm-hmm.
She then took the study to rural Ethiopia, where there would be less of a context, right,
right.
For some of the ways that we operate in terms of car commercials and all that sorts of stuff. And she found out that 89 Ethiopians who compared 49 renderings of cars along with 19 different human traits, including gender, also saw the cars in a very human way. And cars with slit-like wide-set headlights were judged as male, adult, and dominant by both Austrians and Ethiopians, as were cars with smaller windshields and wider faces and smaller eyes and foreheads. Again, the foreheads, the equivalent to the car windshield, were considered to be more masculine features in human faces. So they found that the cars that were considered childlike were also considered more feminine. And this included closer set headlights and larger windshields.
Huh.
So interesting to see these two different cultures both ascribing human qualities to this. So, yeah, there's all sorts of weird emotional landscape here wrapped up.
And dehumanization and anthropomorphism, I mean, those are really, it's the same movement in different directions.
Yeah.
I am either adding personhood to something that is not a person, or am I taking personhood away from something that is a person, or to some degree is a person.
And then there's the whole personhood thing in the
which we covered in an episode.
All right, let's take a break, and when we get back, we will talk about loving robots.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right.
Hey, we're back. We're talking about anthropomorphism, personification. We're taking objects and we're making them worthy of concern, protection, punishment, reward. We can, as humans, we have this innate ability to personify anything, a pencil, a computer, a coffee table. We get mad at a computer that's misbehaving on us. We start shouting at it, calling it names. I stub my toe on a coffee table, and I treat the coffee table like it's an enemy, like I want to attack it for attacking me.
It is. Many coffee tables are the enemy.
Yeah.
And if you look at that car study, then you can easily extrapolate that us humans connecting with robots would just be a logical conclusion, right?
Yeah, exactly. But we're getting into this age where we are using robots. I mean, already I have a robot vacuum cleaner in my house. You know, and there are robot lawn mowers. We're looking at a future where robots will help care for our elderly. They're going to be in our hospitals. They're going to be on our streets. And we're going to be interacting with them all the time. So the same model applies. We don't need to become more like robots to interact with the robots that care for us and do all these tasks. We want the robots to at least meet us halfway.
Well, and meeting us halfway, I'm glad you brought that up because it reminded me of an episode that we did called Living with Robots, in which we talked about the Lyric Project. And in the Lyric Project, they had something called the Robot House.
Robot House. Not to be confused with Robot House from Futurama, which was a robot fraternity.
Right.
On Mars.
And this is not also a new reality show, by the way, at least not yet.
Oh, it would be great. They should do it.
But yeah, 5 weeks in the robot house. Some study participants took their place in this house, and what they tried to figure out in this domestic setting is how annoyed would humans get when robots were programmed to sort of, you know, get in their space or not hand them something in the time that they expected the human expected the robot to hand them something.
Yeah, well, one great example is when we came back from our break, we both spoke at the same time. And our typical response is, oh, I'm sorry, you go first. And you're like, oh, no, you go first.
Yeah.
You finish.
But I did try to match you there for a bit.
But with a robot, one of the examples is often pointed out, like, say you and a robot reach for the same object at the same time. Now, when humans do this, the typical response is going to be, oh, I'm sorry, you were reaching for that. You go ahead. You go ahead and have some of those snacks. I'll hold off. And then the other person will say, no, you do it. Now, is the robot going to have any kind of programming that allows for that kind of consideration, or is the robot simply going to grab the snacks? And then the human, not realizing, and certainly the human is anthropomorphizing, they're regarding this machine as some sort of a human entity to some degree. How are they going to react? They're going to think, oh, well, that stingy robot trying to get these snacks before I can have some. That's totally rude. So how do you have to start thinking of ways to program the robot to behave in a human capacity in even these small little interactions just to avoid sort of subliminal hostility blossoming up.
Yeah, because what they found in the study is that people did start to think that the robots were doing things on purpose and really starting to get angry with them. And this is not just a crazy one-off experiment. That's really this field of human robotics interaction is something that's only like a decade old. But the reason it's there is because it is forthcoming. And,
yeah.
You know, you do want some.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.